Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Sam Pets Radio, Australia's coolest podcast network.
Yep.
All right. Hey, everybody, and welcome to an episode of All the Small Games, an indie game podcast hosted by two great friends, one of whom is the undisputed console king, and the other one is... you can decide your own title.
Lord of the PC.
Lord of the PC.
Because that's the one place I got you. You got a PS, I got a PC.
Yeah, sure, you can keep it. My name is Levins, and his name is John.
That's right.
Ethan Valenzuela. And
yes.
Since we last recorded, I was a naive fool, thinking that all I needed in this world was a Nintendo Switch, a PS4, and a Xbox Series S. But one day later, I got a PS5, and my life's changed.
Yeah? How did it... Not massively. I mean, look, PS has always been your preference. Has getting a PS5 taken the shine off your Xbox Series X a bit?
They're very different systems. There's nothing... I mean, for this podcast, PS5 is relatively useless in terms of indie game exclusivity or, like, accessibility. I think the ecosystem of Game Pass is just so incredible, especially as an indie game fan. You know, we're going to be talking about a few games that I've been playing on there. But a lot of publishers that we love, like pretty much every Devolver game that's maybe like, you know, a little over a year, maybe less than a year old, just shows up on Game Pass. Every Humble Bundle game, Humble Bundle published game, Humble Game, whatever they're called, is on Game Pass. There's plenty of excellent games that we've talked about on the show that are on there, and plenty that I've never played before that I'm looking forward to getting into. Including one game that had been recommended to me a bunch of times that only just came out recently that we're going to be talking about on the show today. Game Pass has been sick for indies.
Hell yeah.
But PS5, yeah. I mean, would you count Bugsnacks? I've been playing Bugsnacks. Is that an indie game? Because remember the Octodad guy. Maybe it is.
Yeah, I think that would count.
I guess that's a pretty good exclusive indie game to have. And I've been playing... You go, dog. Mm-hmm.
Oh, I was going to say, I know that I think Annapurna has that game Stray, where you play as like a cat in a cyberpunk world. I think pretty sure that's a PlayStation exclusive.
They've published another game that's available on... it counts as a PlayStation 5 title. What's it called? It's also an Apple Arcade.
The Pathless? Game.
The Pathless, yeah. People are saying that's pretty good. I haven't gone in on that yet, so I could be playing that.
It is garbage to play on phone.
Yeah. It seems pretty immersive and massive. Like, not the best phone game to play.
Just above and beyond that, like, a lot of the game is based on kind of running real fast. And with a virtual joystick, it is terrible.
Damn, that sucks.
Yeah,
so I have been playing a PS4 game on my PS5. It just means there's, like, fuck all load times because I'm playing on a much more powerful system. And that is a game called Sukuna of Rice and Ruin, which I'll be talking about later on the show. Look, I've been doing a lot of Xbox talk, so I'm going to be talking about Kato, which I've played and finished on there. Same as Tetris Effect, Connected, which totally counts as an indie game. I've played and finished both of those on Game Pass. And I have not been ignoring my Nintendo Switch. In fact, I have a big Switch update since complaining about it a lot on previous episodes. I've fixed my Joy-Con. They no longer drift. Do you have the same problem, John?
I had in my previous pair of Joy-Cons. The new ones, I haven't, like, there have been a couple of moments where I'm like, oh shit, is the drift starting again? But seem to be holding out so far. I am, however, fascinated to find out how you fixed it.
It was really simple.
Walk me through it,
Levins. So I'd previously tried with, isopropan alcohol, like the ISO.
Isopropyl,
alcohol.
Yeah.
I used that with like a cotton bud, as someone described me do on YouTube, and that did not do the trick. But I read that the thing to get is WD-40, not the oil, but the contact cleaner.
Okay,
and
interesting.
So I got some contact cleaner, and yeah, you lift up the little plastic lip on the Joy-Con, on the little joystick itself, and then you get the little nozzle, the kind of like, you make sure you get the, you know, the WD-40 kind of like hose nozzle thing.
Yeah, the red nozzle, yeah.
You shove that in there, you give it a couple sprays, then you jimmy the joystick around and around a few times, and then wipe all the excess cleaner off. And they've been right as rain. I fixed them both yesterday. Both of mine were so fucked. Like, my kids have been playing Just Dance, and it won't let them select a song because it will just decide, no, we're going to scroll left until it's impossible not to. So yeah, they'll be at like at the bottom of the screen of like, you know, 400 songs or whatever, and then it'll be like, and just scroll all the way back up to the top. They start to scream. It's not a great way to play Just Dance at all. But yeah, now they're fixed. I played a game that I found like I had to stop playing because of how bad the drift was and because there were some bugs. But in the same week that they patched the game, I fixed my Joy-Con and I was able to go back to Disc Room, the Devolver Digital game on the Switch. And yesterday I was like, I'll just see how it is to play Disc Room because I had like severe problems with drifting on that game. And I ended up playing it for like 2.5 hours and I finished it. So I finished Disc Room.
Nice. Well done.
Very, very happy.
And the final, you were saying the final boss is like brutally hard.
Oh yeah, I sent you a screenshot of like the total number of kills. I don't know how many people have listened, have played the game and can compare, but I died 1,749 times while playing Disc Room on regular mode. I got 81% completion. It took me just over 5 hours to finish. And the deadliest room was the Ultimate Gatekeeper, which is the name for the final boss. And I died 427 times to his blades.
God damn.
So that's more than a quarter. More than a quarter of the deaths in that game were due to that one boss.
I wonder, hypothetically, what is like... Because it's a game where there's no way you can finish this game without dying. So I wonder if there's going to be some kind of competitiveness over what's the least number of deaths.
There actually is this, like, I read it and I'm like, fuck off. It's like, in order to get like the true and good ending, you can only die in each room once. And you can only die to each blade once.
Okay.
And you have to finish the game in like 20 minutes.
What?
Just like, yeah, it's like just sadistic, impossible shit for my brain. But I'm sure there are people who are far more adept at these kind of games. And I bet you they're all PC Master Race motherfuckers like you, John.
I will be YouTubing that because there's no chance in hell of me ever actually achieving it.
You going to try and finish Disc Room?
Yeah, I'll give it a shot. I'll definitely return to it.
The first phase of the final boss is just so goddamn hard. The boss has like blade, like discs that he spins, they throws out to you, and then they also spin out like almost like a centipede of discs that then bounce off the walls.
God.
Plus, he has this thing that like it slows you down. So like the same way that you use it to slow everything else down when you have it, he can slow you down too. And it's so hard. And then he targets you and flies at you. The second and third phase aren't anywhere near as hard, but the first phase I couldn't master. It was so tough.
What was your preferred what are they called, power or whatever?
Power, yeah. It was There's a really, really great one that I don't want to spoil for you. The final one I found was really fun and was necessary in the, because the last levels, what you're doing is you're clearing all these squares. You've got to cross over each square. Like say, like the level is now made up of like 30 squares on the floor, and you have to run over every single one of the squares while avoiding getting hit by discs. There's an effect that makes that slightly easier. So I use that a lot in the final levels, but slow. The second power up you get was my most used by far.
Yeah, definitely. Useful. During my playthrough, that's the one I gravitated to the most, just because getting that like 1 to 2 seconds of breathing room could sometimes make or break my attempt at a level.
There's some really obtuse puzzles that I had to look up to get, you know, to figure out what you were meant to do in certain rooms. There's like a pattern that you need to follow to even get to a certain room, and all kinds of weird challenges. It's certainly not going to be a game that I'm going to 100% because I think I would lose my mind, but I'm very happy that I finished it and got the quote unquote bad ending. Whatever, it's an ending, I'm done.
Yeah.
You immediately unlock hard mode, and it took me like 10 minutes to beat the first level on hard mode, and I was like, I have to bid this game adieu.
Yeah, we're done here, Disc Room.
Fucking great game though, so glad I played and didn't disappoint at all.
Yeah, definitely. So speaking of games talked about previously that have been now finished by one of us.
Yeah, this is the finish zone. Let's only talk about games that we've finished in the beginning of this episode.
So
DIY repairs and finishing games.
Yeah, definitely.
The perfect opening segment.
So I finished one of the games I'm going to be talking about later, which is Yuppie Psycho, on my Switch. And then I was like, I need something to play on my Switch. You know, and I've got games, like I have a pile of shame on my Switch. There are games that I've never even touched. I have CrossCode, I've never opened that game. I've got Creature in the Well, I've never opened that game. Like all these games that are, you know, waiting for me. But you know how sometimes you like, you kind of, they're not ticking the boxes you want to tick. So I was just scrolling through my library and I came across Golf Story. Now, Golf Story, I think, is one of the, like, we spoke about this game.
It came out before we started the podcast.
Yeah, I think it was mentioned in your top 10 list of Switch games, which was like our fourth or fifth episode or something. Mm-hmm. So I picked that up at the time and, you know, enjoyed it, but kind of like, it's a golf game. You eventually are like, oh, okay, I'm settled with this at the moment.
The quirks of the story are definitely charming.
Oh, definitely. It's a massively charming game. So I was like, you know what? I kind of like, I've just been through Yuppie Psycho. It's a bit of an experience. I just want something nice and calm and kind of, you know, fun to play. So I picked up Golf Story again. But this time I was like, you know what? I'm taking this to the mat. I'm not walking away from Golf Story. I'm going to fucking finish it this time. And stupidly enough, like I had a save on there where I was up to like level 24 in terms of, cause you know, it's got the RPG progression system.
Yeah. So yeah, for those who don't know it, Golf Story is like an RPG. Is it like almost like a SNES era RPG about golf? So you're a dude who basically making his way through different golf courses, and there's very fun story and conversations that you have with different characters and fun challenges, and you level up, you get new clubs, all that kind of shit.
Yeah. Yeah. It's super fun. So I had an original save file, but my idiot brain was like, no, you can't remember the controls. Just start from the beginning again. And so I did that. And after about 5 minutes, I was like, that's right. The controls are really easy to learn. This is stupid. But I just kept going. I was like, I can't remember a lot of the story beats and stuff like that. And I swear going back, I'm like, I think they've added new stuff into it because there are bits and pieces that I'm like, I don't remember how, like this bit. I remember bits after it and bits before it, but I don't remember this particular bit. Anyway, long story short, the final, like, the end of the game, because the whole point of the game is you're trying to go pro, and to go pro, you need to finish a professional tournament, which is the last kind of big tournament of the game. It is the difference in difficulty between that tournament and the rest of the game is just massive. Because the rest of the game gives you a bit of leeway, like, whenever you play a tournament, inevitably, the person in second place has like +3, +4 in terms of their number of goal strokes. This one, you need to like essentially play a perfect or better game.
Damn.
To get out. So I restarted so many times after like on the second or third hole, racking up a plus two in terms of pars. Like, God damn it, quit to the world map, start the tournament again. But finally, I played like a nail-biting like round of golf, nine holes. I think the final hole, the final stroke on the final hole, I wound up using, because you get certain, there are three kind of special shots you can do, one of which like ignores the wind direction.
Right.
And I was like, okay, I'm breaking it out now. Golf ball sunk, and I was just like, oh my God, thank God, I'm done with this game. Because this is something, like you said, it's same with Disc Room. I never have to touch Golf Story again. I've finished it, I'm happy, we're good. But look, like you said, the combination of RPG and golf game is real interesting, and I think it's an Australian game as well, so that alone, pick it up, support the local industry. You know,
their sequel is like Sport Story is what it's called.
Sport Story, and it mixes all different sports together, and I'm really excited for it.
Did you fuck around with? I remember hating the frisbee golf, and I got stuck trying to beat that and a putt putt golf, and both of them kept fucking up for me, and that's why I stopped playing the game.
Finished everything.
Okay, wow, well done.
Yeah,
you did it.
Finished the frisbee golf stuff. Putt putt. I think there are various putting challenges. Finished all that. Yes, it
nice
is.
Job.
I don't know why it was like, I want to plant a flag on the top of this mountain. It was also, part of my mind was like, I'm going to have finished Golf Story and Levins won't have.
So on the golf note, and we should say that that Golf Story is, I think at this point, still a Switch exclusive.
I believe so.
I've been playing, I went back to an old favorite, one of our favorite games of last year, What the Golf. On
yes.
Apple Arcade on my phone, a perfect. Whereas the Pathless is a shocking game to play on your phone. What the Golf is, I think the perfect place to play it is on your phone.
Oh, absolutely.
So I've gone back to that game because I got a message from the app saying that there's been a Christmas update, and so there's quite a substantial new campaign now on What the Golf.
Oh,
And it's Christmas themed, and like it even has like, you know, the hub world where you've got to, you know, find your way through this funny environment of scientists and weird creatures and then find the holes in there. And when you hit the ball in the hole, then you get like a world with multiple levels in it. And
yeah.
they're all snow themed. It's really fun.
Hell yeah. I will definitely be going back in on that.
Loved that game. And it was so fun to get a whole bunch of new levels and fun, dumb, new writing and jokes from that great game. So yeah, definitely if you've gotten about that game, or maybe you're someone that continues to play for Apple Arcade despite never using it, go and check out What the Golf for a fun update.
It's also on Switch as well, so
grab it
there if you want. And Steam.
I wonder how it is to play, yeah, on a console.
Yeah.
The touch controls are so responsive. Oh, I love them.
Oh yeah, and so intuitive as well. All right, should we rip into what we've been playing lately?
I've got one last game that I've finished. As I said at the start of the episode, it is technically an indie game, even though it is a game using one of the best known games of all time. It's Tetris Effect, specifically the new enhanced version called Tetris Effect Connected. I've been playing it on my Xbox One S, and it is a game that was directed by Takashi Ishihara. And he is a dude most famous for a few incredible indie background. Wait, sorry, did I say the right thing? I may have said the wrong Japanese name.
Oh, I do not know.
Are we
cancelled?
No, I'm reading the wrong credit. Maybe it was produced by the guy the producer may be the more famous one. Here we go. Tetsuya Mizuguchi is his name, and he.
There we go.
He's the responsible for Rez and Lumines, amidst other games for Sega. But Rez and Lumines are kind of like, I guess, like after Tetris, some of the most beloved puzzle games. So he got his hands on Tetris and put together Tetris Effect. Originally came out for PSVR, then they made a regular version, and now they've made this enhanced version, which at the moment is exclusive to Xbox. And it is essentially like extremely hypnotic, almost like drug-induced Tetris. I'm a massive Tetris head. I fucking love it. My favorite version of Tetris is the DS version, which incorporated lots of like Nintendo characters and stuff like that. But this is just a whole nother level. I would love it. It's the ultimate like game that you just want to show someone who maybe like John, you maybe you've heard of this game before, but like in playing it, basically like it's a very musical based game in that you as the blocks fall and you rotate them, it creates noises that then come together to create a song, and then a beat starts kicking in as the speed of the game starts increasing, as you clear more lines.
Yeah.
And, man, it's so hypnotic. It's so incredible. Like but it's really dangerous because I'll play it and then my eyes will hurt. And then right. I realize it's because I don't blink while I play a Tetris effect.
Shookers.
So,
and that is the Tetris effect.
Yeah. I think the Tetris effect actually refers to when...
No, like, it's a specific
right back when people first started playing it. Like, yeah, when you would see the blocks, like whenever you closed your eyes or whenever you, like, you know, had dreams about Tetris. But I love the kind of, you know, it's very cringy in parts, EDM soundtrack, but it works so well for the game. And, you know, when you first play Tetris on Game Boy or wherever else, you know that the speed can go up to, you know, 10 or even 15 on some versions, but you're never going to go above like 3 because it just gets too goddamn hard. This game forces you to get good at being at Tetris at the fastest level it could possibly go to. So there's like a story, not so much there's a campaign, and each of them is like a different themed level, and each level has different speeds depending on which level of the amount of lines you've cleared. And like there are multiple times where you're doing like it first, like when it first brings you up to a speed of 7, you're like, God damn it, that's so fast. And by the end of the game, you're so used to it going up to the teens, like, you know, 12, 13, that when it goes to 7, you're like, oh, sweet, relaxing, slow Tetris.
Right, sure.
Yeah. It's a fucking great game. Really, really geniusly done. And like, yeah, like I said, like a very druggy feeling, hypnotic experience. Highly recommended. And I'm finishing the campaign again on normal. I don't think I have the chutzpah to finish it on hard. But I was very happy.
We're in our 30s now, man. Hard level, nah. who can be bothered?
True.
Before we rip into the main body of reviews, there is one other thing I remembered to talk about, which is beginning of this episode, I said I was the Lord of PC. Didn't seem to impress you that much. Just like, you know, you Shania Twain'd me.
Right. Oh, so you have a PC or something?
Yeah. However, I did, because of my PC, get to play a demo of a game that you and I are very excited about. I speak, of course, of the Devolver Digital published, developed by Skeleton Crew Studio, Olija, or if you're not big into Spanish pronunciations, Elijah. So it's a game that we saw, I think... Where it was the Devolver Digital Showcase, I think, maybe? That's
Maybe it was an indie... Or maybe, I can't remember. It was either an indie director or a Devolver Showcase, yeah.
Yeah, so they during the recent Steam kind of... Steam had like a sort of indie festival or something along those lines, but there was a bunch of games that put demos out, of which Olija was one of them. And I gave it a bit of a go. I wasn't playing in optimal conditions. I couldn't be asked to grab a controller out, so I was playing with the WASD keys and you know, control and etc., which
gross
is not the best way to play a platformer. I'll totally admit that. But this, you are going to fucking love this game. Like the harpoon mechanic in it, because you're a guy named Faraday who is shipwrecked on an island, or is shipwrecked in this country, and you're trying to get home, and you pick up this sort of mythical harpoon, and basically you can like you throw the harpoon. You can throw it at enemies, or there's like various grappling points on the level. You can then kind of fling yourself over to where your harpoon is. You can call it back to yourself. So there are all these like cool little combat maneuvers you can pull with this harpoon. Very, very cool retro art style, like really chunky sort of pixels. I think it's due out next year. It's coming to everything. It's coming to Switch, PlayStation, Xbox, and PC.
Yeah, I'm so excited. So, for this.
Yeah, really, really looking forward to this one coming out. Looks like it's going to be, definitely, I think it'll be a game that both of us will finish.
Unreal. But the real question is, who will finish it first?
Who knows, man? Have you finished Hades?
It could be a golf story, golf story affair.
Or it could be Hades. Both of us want to finish, neither of us have yet.
Yeah, that ain't happening.
All right,
sorry,
hit us with a review,
sorry,
Levins.
Greek gods. So let's talk about Kato, a game which we have both played. I have finished this one, or rather, I finished it with children. Both my kids played this with me. Archie, in particular, my almost 7-year-old son, was a huge fan of this game, and he played a great deal of this game by himself because especially in the first two kind of chapters of this game, in which you play a cartographer trying to make the map of the world that she's exploring and find her grandma. The first few chapters are relatively simple, and then some of the puzzles get considerably harder, so I needed to step in and help out. But this is a game that's been published by Humble, and we've, raved about a lot of Humble games in the past.
Yeah.
But I just think they make such awesome, inclusive, fun family games. Wanda Song is a very personal favorite. Obviously, I love Slay the Spire as well. It does not fit in the same realm of the games that I'm talking about. Iconfell, a game that I talked about last episode, definitely I would put in the same category. But yeah, Kato is just like a really, really sweet, charming game. It's a puzzle game in which you play like a young explorer, a cartographer, who everyone calls Kato. She's mostly silent for the great deal of the game, but she meets a lot of characters who do a lot of the talking. You can traverse the various terrains that you explore, and whenever you press the map button, you zoom out and you can take pieces of the map and rotate them around and connect them with other pieces of the map, and that allows you to navigate the terrain and also unlock and solve puzzles as you explore.
Yeah, so. It's a fantastic mechanic. I got to admit, playing through... I'm up to chapter 3, I think.
Yep.
I'm just in that deep... that kind of the dark forest.
Woods. Yep.
The foggy woods. Yeah. It's one of those great kinds of puzzles where when the solution clicks for you, it feels really rewarding. Because there's, for instance, with the foggy woods, navigating the foggy woods, there's no, you working out that, a fallen tree points in the direction you've got to go.
Yes.
Because before you figure that out, you're just kind of wandering back and forward, and there are little, musical prompts that tell you if you've gone the right way or the wrong way. So finally figuring out, oh, that's the direction I should go. Because at first, it doesn't quite make sense because more often than not, the tree trunks are telling you to go back the way you came.
Mm-hmm.
But once you sort of when I figured out, oh, that's what I'm supposed to do. Oh, man, felt so good. Felt so smart.
It's all about experimenting. You're not going to be given the answer until you fuck up a few times. There was only one point in the entire game where I genuinely had no idea what was expected of me. There were clues, and if I randomly moved the map around, then sometimes good things happened. But then I didn't know what to do for the next part, so I did have to look up a guide for one bit.
Right.
But that was very late in the game, one of the final puzzles. But for the most part, this is an excellent game to play with kids or a partner who isn't as game-obsessed as you may be. It's a really, really sweet story and a very easy-to-comprehend, difficult to kind of... Not so much... It's not really hard to master, but there are, once you understand the mechanics, there are some tricky puzzles that you have to solve using those mechanics.
The good thing is it gives you so much space to experiment. I don't think I'm only up to chapter 3, but I'm pretty sure at no point will I hit a fail state.
No, not at all.
I'm totally able to just do whatever I want to try work it out.
To that end, it's very similar to Wanda Song.
Yeah, I really love the story so far. I love it. I've gotten two letters from the grandma character so far.
Yep.
And they're so positive and lovely. Because the game, the reason this young cartographer is trying to find her way home is she's in an airship with her grandma at the beginning and she falls out during a storm. And just the communications you have with your grandma, she's so just like... You're exploring the world and that's wonderful and have a great time and meet people, etc. It makes you feel so excited to be on this adventure as opposed to oh, I'm, you know, there was an accident and I screwed up or anything like that. Like,
no, just totally, really, yeah. The world's going to end if I don't, you know.
Yeah, it encourages you to explore as opposed to, like, threatens you with consequences if you don't explore, I guess would be the way I put it.
Yes, definitely.
And the art style is, like, children's book gorgeous.
Yeah, I think this is, like, just such an awesome game. I'll look it up now. I assume it's on almost everything.
I can tell you, I have it here. It is on Switch, PlayStation 4, Xbox One, Mac, and PC, and developed by Sunhead Games.
I think it was made by a fairly small team led by Lee Ku Chen
from Sunhead Games. Like two or three Games. People, I think, out of Taiwan.
Yeah, it was great. I loved this game. Very, very fun.
Yeah.
And
a
perfect game to play with kids.
Definitely.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Welcome to Sincerely Sloan, presented by Uninterrupted. I'm your host, professional tennis player, wife, parent, and entrepreneur, Sloan Stevens. As an athlete and as a person, my journey has had a lot of twists and turns, from moments of adversity and doubt to unimaginable triumph and satisfaction. Throughout the season, I'm joined by some of the biggest names in sports, entertainment, culture, and a few members of my tribe. Our conversations keep it real and push it past skin deep. We reveal the perspectives, routines, and products that allow each of us to show up at our best. Join me on my journey of self-discovery and many, many laughs along the way. Sincerely, Sloan.
Do you want to talk to us about what was it, Sukuna of Rice and Ruin?
Yeah, so I've been playing a few games published by Marvelous Games.
Okay.
I think they're based in Japan, but they are the publisher responsible for publishing games like Rune Factory, Story of Seasons, those kind of games. But then also they published the No More Heroes games, which I've been playing
right.
The Switch ports of, because the third No More Heroes game is coming out soon. I play a little bit of the first No More Heroes on my Wii, and it is so much more fun playing them with not motion controls on my Switch, especially
Hell
now
yeah.
that my Joy-Cons work. It rocks. But, man, Marvelous have put out a lot of great games. I think they're like probably the biggest independent Japanese video game developer and publisher. They also do anime and stuff like that as well. But I believe they're responsible for like Wii games as well, like Muramasa and Little King Story. But I mean, do you know much about No More Heroes?
I know Suda51 is the brains behind it.
Yep.
Head of Grasshopper Games. I know he's like a legendary game designer, kind of in the way Hideo Kojima is. But he's sort of like the twisted version of Hideo Kojima.
Yeah.
that's rough. I know they're sort of bonkers. Like the No More Heroes series are like, I have a vague idea of the plot. I know they're really kind of batshit insane.
Yep. They're
is
so
there
much
more
fun.
I should know?
I mean, you would love them. You play like a hitman who learns of there being like an elite crew. Basically, you find yourself at the bottom rung of 10 other assassins, And because you are now the 10th best assassin, every assassin in town is going to try and take you out so they can become the 10th best assassin. So it's in your interest to kill all the assassins above you and make your way higher up that list. So right. you just basically kill your way through 10 different assassins. But while you're not killing, you have to do like odd jobs around town that are like... odd jobs of just mini games that you do for money to buy your way like in to buy like your way into tournaments and buy new gear and things like that. So it is like this kind of like primitive open world game, because it was a Wii game, with like really great fighting mechanics. And I mean, the main reason you're playing it though is for a batshit insane story with hilarious dialogue. And to that end, it holds up really, really well. It's very funny. And the ports are excellent. I have to say, yeah, they look as good as like, you know, a Wii game could on the Switch. And I haven't had any issues with gameplay at all. I've beaten two of the assassins so far. I'm not like, you know, chomping at the bit to play more and more of it every single day, but once a week, you know, 2 weeks since I've had it, I'll go to get in there and make my way towards one of the next bosses or whatever. It's fun. It's really, really fun. Lots of great humor, great personality. And I plan to finish both of them before No More Heroes 3 comes out next year.
Nice.
So Marvelous also published a game called Sakuna of Rice and Ruin. And I mentioned Muramasa earlier. Muramasa was this incredible game that I played on the Wii, and then I got the Vita version of too. Just an excellent, like it was like set in like pre-feudal Japan, and like just basically like a very fun sword fighting, like killing monsters with different blades, kind of platformer brawler game, with lots of personality, like lots of like fun things, like, you know, every time you killed all the enemies, you then made your way to a new town, and when you're in town, you can go and visit like a traditional Japanese spa or like a place that will make you like a rice and curry set or whatever to give you new stats and health. I had a lot of charm. It was really, really fun, and the combat was excellent. And Sukuna is a little bit similar. Sukuna is one part like brawler platformer. You play a young god whose boots have gotten too big for her feet. Or she's too big for her boots, I believe.
There we go.
The saying is. She's basically like, she's way too pampered and expects she's just a spoilt little piece of shit, basically. So the gods send her to fend for herself with some humans on a rugged, monster-filled island. And the way you level up in this game, get stronger and you know, take less damage, is the second part of this game. This game is also a farming sim. So nice. You are tending to rice crops, and you have to, like, you know, check the soil levels, remove pests, and like have these great harvests of rice. And in turn, you only do as good as your crops do, and that makes you stronger and better in battle. There is way more depth to the rice growing simulator than there are than there is in the very, very solid, fun brawling sections. But yeah, like there is a lot of like fun moves you can unlock and things like that. But I could get very, very lost in the farming stuff. If you love, like, you know, farming games and you're worried that the brawler is the main emphasis of this game, I think you could spend more time in the farming stuff if you really wanted to. There's a, like, you have to like make your own fertilizer and make sure it has like all the right alkaline levels, and it's crazy. It's so much fun, and it trickles the, like, there's a lot of information to take in eventually. I've only played like, I think like 6 or 7 days of the game's day cycle, but I've learned so much weird stuff to do with how to grow my crops. And then, like, you know, the better my rice is, the longer I can survive in the brawling sections. And then you unlock more resources that then you take back to your farm, and, like, you know, you help all the people out on your farm with the resources you've got. You also have to hunt all the food that you eat. And you feed everybody. That there's like a cook, and you have to like teach your cook to be better at cooking, because the first meal that she cooks is like just like burnt meat.
Right.
Yeah, it's great. So you're like fighting monsters, getting their flesh, taking it back to your camp. Everyone has a nice big healthy meal. You're stronger. you tend to your rice, you use the resources on the rice grows well, and then you are better in battle, and then you repeat. It's a great loop. I'm really, really enjoying it. Yeah, I'm playing that on PS5 at the moment, the PS4 version. It is on Switch as well.
Okay.
And I don't think it's too like labor-intensive of a Switch. I assume it would play pretty well on Switch, but it looks damn good on my PS5. Those grains of rice, man. Those little spiders that I'm finding in my sleeping quarters. They're beautiful, man.
Yeah. Right. Okay. This is very much intrigued me.
Yeah. They're both. It's a really, really good game. Yeah.
Cool. Excellent. Well, my my forays into small games over the last couple of weeks, I was very excited with the release of Yuppie Psycho. So this is I don't want to say new game, it's the latest game from developer Baroque Decay, who was the mind behind the Count Lucanor.
That's right.
Fractured
mind.
The twisted mind behind. Yeah, so developed by Baroque Decay. Count Lucanor, famously, if you listen to the podcast, is the game that you switched off because it got far too spooky.
Too scary. Yep.
Too scary. So this time, Count Lucanor was kind of this guy's take on like fairy tales and fables. This time, it's his take on office culture. So you play this guy, Brian Pasternak, like a kind of a simple country rube, if you will, who received a job offer from the biggest corporation on earth, a company called Cintricorp. Now, you didn't exactly excel at your studies because Cintricorp gets the best of the best of the best. You didn't apply for a job there, so what the hell are you doing being given a job opportunity at Cintricorp? You discover the whole game basically takes place on your first day, and one of the first things you find out is you were hired at Cintricorp to be a witch hunter because there is evil afoot in Cintricorp, which is caused by the presence of a witch, and your job is to try track this witch down and essentially get rid of her or solve the problem. It's a much bigger and more ambitious game than the Count Lucanor. Like the Count Lucanor, you're in the Count's castle. There were like 9 or 10 rooms that you could explore. With this game, there are 10 floors for you to explore.
Yep.
And it gets real weird in this building. Like one floor is a forest and a cemetery. Another floor is just hundreds and hundreds of office workers like aggressively milling around. You know, just real, like, it does a great job of taking mundane situations and making them really creepy.
Must have been fun playing this after going under.
I think I was playing it kind of around the same time.
Right.
So it was very strange to be like, oh, this is a different take on going under, kind of, or, you know, to play these two games fairly back-to-back that were both based on office culture.
Yep.
There were definitely moments in this game that, like, more moments in this game more so than the Count Lucanor that, like, really unsettled me.
That's exciting.
So, like, one of the bosses is this giant dot matrix printer with, like, hands, but no, like,
and
hands
like, oh,
coming
no,
out.
Old tech.
No, because it has fucking hands coming out, either like giant hands coming out all sides of it, and that's how.
Oh, I see. You've sent me a photo of this. Yeah, I see it.
It like scuttles around, and in the lead up to getting to that boss, you're passing all these like dead bodies that the boss has killed. Like it's pretty fucking heavy. it's also like Count Lucanor had 3 different endings. This one has, like, there are 2 main ending paths you can take, and then various endings branching off that one based on small decisions you make. Mm-hmm. So I did, like, I did the 2 main paths, kind of, and took the best way I could find out of both of them. One of the ending paths has you, like, exploring the boarded up kind of... One of the levels of the building is, like, the mansion that the family that owns the company used to live in.
Right.
And one of the endings is you kind of like trying to discover who the witch is while playing hide and seek with this really fucked up version of a little girl. And so you're like racing around trying to like do these tasks in this house. And then all of a sudden you'll be in a room and creepy music will start playing. And you just know that like this terrifying looking little girl is like hide and seek and starts trying to find you. And if she finds you, she'll stab you. And you can only take like 3 or 4 stabs at this point before you die.
Just 3 or 4 stabs. So
you have to piss bolt for a wardrobe or a hiding space and pray that she doesn't track you down. It was like just super, super tense gameplay. So I had a great time. I think I love Broke Decay's stuff. I think he makes really great, creepy kind of horror games. If you're looking for a scare, then I highly recommend checking out Yuppie Psycho. Really fun. It's been on Steam for ages. Like I think it was released on Steam 25th of April last year, but it only made its way to Switch in like the last month or so. So if you are against the PC, but you have a Switch, definitely cop it now, because it's really, really fun. And the other game that I've dipped my toe into over the last couple of days is a game called Cook Serve Delicious 3.
So you've told me about these games before. This is like the way more, it's like, what if Overcooked wasn't fun?
Okay. First of all, fuck you. Second of all, it's like, Overcooked is like a fun multiplayer, like chaotic multiplayer game. This is a cooking simulator where that's all about like precision and maintaining your head in stressful situations.
So what was wrong with what I just said? What was incorrect?
You were being a dick about it. with Cook Serve, like the Cook Serve Delicious series, it's all about you are running a restaurant. You decide what dishes go on your menu each day, and then you cook this food over the course of the day. Customers come in, they order, you have to put their order together as quickly as possible. Some stuff's really easy to cook. You like dump it in a deep fryer, pull it out, and it's ready to serve. Some of the stuff is really complicated, involving like lots of different ingredients and also customization from the customer. So they might want like a burger, for instance. Someone might want a burger with a lot, which will involve you putting on a lot of different ingredients. Some people might want just a triple cheeseburger, but you need to think that you have to cook 3 patties, you need to put 3 slices of cheese. So it's all about paying attention to these details. You screw up any of the details and the customer goes away angry and you destroy your chance of having a perfect day. So the wrinkle that they've added for the third one that's really interesting is, because the first game revolves around you've started your restaurant, Cook Serve Delicious. You want to gain reputation and reach kind of the top of this skyscraper, the Tetragon skyscraper, which is like the, you know, the toniest location in town. You're trying to build up your rep and make your way up to the top floor. The second game, it is discovered that the people that own Tetragon building have been engaging in fraud. So your restaurant is like closed down along with the rest of the skyscraper. And you then have to go and like do odd jobs at other restaurants. I really didn't like number two because it didn't have that like... Number one was great because you had that sense of like, oh, I'm building my own business up. I'm, you know, sweet, another perfect day completed. I've gone up a rank. This is fucking awesome. Two kind of took that away from you. And instead, like, you still have your own restaurant in number two, but your progression is no longer focused on how you perform in that restaurant. And how you perform in these other restaurants, it just unlocks cosmetic upgrades for your restaurant, which... I don't give two shits about cosmetic upgrades. Like, if they'd added something to the cosmetic upgrades where it's like, if you use this kind of wallpaper, your patrons are willing to wait 5% longer for their food to arrive. Or, you know, your oven will cook food 5%. Like, if there was sort of utility in the decorations, then it would have been slightly interesting. It was purely cosmetic. I didn't give a shit about it. I played maybe 45 minutes of Cook Serve Delicious 2 and just went, I hate this, I'm out. Cook Serve Delicious 3 starts with the building that you're in exploding. And you get fished out of the rubble by two robots who are driving like a search and rescue van. And they recognize you as like the chef for this world famous Cook Serve Delicious restaurant. And they go, hey, how about we turn our van into a food van or a food truck, and we'll drive with you across country to a food truck competition. And you like, one of us will be the driver, the other one will defend you from enemy attacks, you cook the food. And so off you go on this like road trip set in the year like 2040 or something, where some catastrophe has caused America to like crumble. Just this, it's got the weirdest fucking narrative behind it. But they've updated the gameplay as well, because you're in a food truck now and you're no longer in a restaurant. When you're in a restaurant, you start the day, there'll be like dribs and drabs of people coming in, and then you'll have two rush periods, one for lunch and one in the evening. With the food truck, you have three stops during your day, and each stop, like as you approach your stop, you'll get orders in advance of what people will want. You can put food in holding stations, like simple snack food that you can then like make in bulk and pass out. When you hit your stop, your board immediately fills up and is the most fucking stressful thing. Imagine like seven customers all wanting their order at the same time, and you are frantically juggling like, okay, I've got these ones ready to go. Send them out. This person needs this specifically made. Put that together, get it cooking. While I've been doing that, other orders are coming. Like, it is nail-bitingly like pressure. Like, the pressure is insane now. And it's that much harder now to get a perfect day, because there's so many things going on that demand your attention that you're just trying to like get food out as quickly as possible. They have added some elements, like your robots act as sort of chef's assistants. So if you have like tons of orders that are ready to go on the board, instead of having to like tick them off individually, you can just press control and your robot will expedite them themselves.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just sort of starting out. I've done a few stops so far, but I'm like, fuck it. You guys have got me back in number three. I am down for this. I'm really looking forward to playing my way through, trying to make it to these food truck championships.
Wow. So is it so fun though?
For me, it is. I think you'd hate it.
Because of my actual experience in running a restaurant and hating that experience.
Yep, that'd definitely factor into it. I just think this is one of those things that highlights that you and I enjoy different things with games.
Oh no, absolutely. No, that's great. I am just giving you shit. I'm sure it's fun ass.
Viva la difference.
Rank the Cook Serve Delicious games for me.
1, 3, 2.
Okay, right.
I think one, and this is mainly based on, I could go back and play one again and see how I feel about it, and it might change, it might go 3, 1, 2, but I just think that my initial introduction to the series, I think, has such a fond place in my heart that I think that comes number one. It was so, like, so simple and unencumbered by extra gameplay mechanics, whereas I think now number three is starting to really kind of use gameplay mechanics they introduced in number two and make them work, kind of.
Mm-hmm.
As opposed to just feeling like innovation for innovation's sake.
Yeah, cool.
Anyway, okay. you can grab this game on Nintendo Switch, PlayStation 4, Xbox One, and it's on PC and Mac as well. Personally, I would not play this on a console. Just because the way you prepare it, like, if you're playing it on keyboard, it's literally like, it's almost like a typing tutor. whereas playing it on controllers,
you're so bad at selling this game.
It's, for instance, I memorized this last night. The sequence of keys to make a grilled cheese sandwich is SDCWNH.
Wow.
The moment you lock that down, though, anytime a grilled cheese sandwich is ordered, you know that you can bash that out in half a second and get it cooking.
Okay.
It's about that kind of like rote memorization and learning like what to do really quickly under pressure. Doing it on a keyboard is nice and simple. Doing it on a controller is trying to pat your head and rub your stomach at the same time, but you have six arms.
Yeah, it sounds like a nightmare.
Oh yeah, you'd fucking hate this game. But I'm a big fan.
How does it rank in terms of like the most John game of all time? Is it this or is it Mud Runner? Snow Runner.
Oh, Snow Runner is the most John game of all time.
Okay, there we go.
I realized the other day Snow Runner would be the perfect game or the perfect name for like a young Jeezy album.
He's just Jeezy now, but I agree.
All right.
What about a game where you play a Russian trucker who has to drive a food truck through the snow, and there's someone in the back of the truck making food for other trucks as they pass him?
That would be... I mean... Look, it's a hell of a pitch. Let's get this in. Let's get this in front of Devolver. Let's get this in front of Humble. Let's see what kind of
no. It needs to be made by like a weird Russian developer, like the SnowRunner games.
Oh sure, right.
Who makes Cook Serve Delicious?
Vertigo Gaming. They both developed and published it.
Interesting. Okay, cool.
And I'm pretty sure. Let me just look them up. Yeah. So they've done the three Cook Serve Delicious games. What else have they done? The Oil Blue.
Okay.
Not sure what that is.
Is it a game in which you play someone trying to navigate an oil tanker through the snow? Might be a game for you.
Possibly. The Sandbox of God, Spirit of Metropolis, Shell Blast. So nothing, like, I think Cook Serve Delicious has been their biggest thing so far.
I'm trying to figure out where Vertigo Gaming are due. Based.
Texas,
okay.
Yeah.
Russia's natural enemy.
Yeah, exactly. The Russia of the United States.
I think that's Alaska.
That's actually very true. Yeah, so it's been some great gaming this couple of weeks.
Yeah, man. Hell of a month of gaming.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode. We will be back. Are we going to get an episode in before our best of the year episode, John? It's possible we will. We can damn well
yeah,
try.
I reckon we will.
If you want to get in touch with us before we record the next episode, we would love to hear from you. You can email us at allthesmallgames@gmail.com or you can get in touch over Facebook, facebook.com/allthesmallgames or on Twitter @allthesmallgame. I'm aware that there's a weird issue where our podcast, for some reason, isn't publishing to Spotify. Joel Zammit from Sans Pants said he was looking into it, but he is also organizing a wedding. So who knows what his priorities are. But I would understand if you don't get a new episode on Spotify for a while, you know who to blame. That's right. That no good marriage.
I've been against it
from the start.
The new episode of All the Small Games goes up, but it's his wedding.
Yeah, perfect.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for listening. John, thank you so much for playing games.
Thank you so much for playing games and talking to me, Levins.
You're welcome, dude. You're especially welcome for the playing games part.
Yeah, it's been fun. All right. See you next time, everybody.
Stay cool out there, snow runners.
Yeah.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Winning is an everyday mindset, and we're here to help. I'm Craig Robinson. Join me and Coach John Calipari for Ways to Win. We're kicking off during March Madness. Cal's Kentucky Wildcats are in the hunt. So throughout the tournament, I'm going to call up my friend to ask about his wins, losses, and especially what he's telling his players in the locker room.
You got to win every day.
Find the Ways to Win podcast anywhere you listen.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.